Brethren, so that we are able to start, let me take the opportunity to welcome you all to this Portfolio Committee of Communications. I also want to take this opportunity to remind you that officially the President would have launched the 16 days of fatism on the fight against children and women abuse. And I'm sure in our own way, as we'll be going back to constituencies in no time, we'll contribute positively to that. Maybe to a point that in future years, it will not be the fight against, but the protection of women and children. Having said that, let me, for record, register the following apologies from the Deputy Minister, P.K. Khan, who's attending an internet governance conference in Germany, so she would not be able to join us. Honorable Van Dam Sigliff, Honorable Tlaiko Sigliff, and Honorable Mukwena, who's got flight delays, may not join us, as he's just departing on the other side. So those are the apologies. I'll get indications later to update in case I would have left any name out. Honourable members, just a reminder that today would be looking on two main presentations as I welcome the board and executives of CETA as the first presentation that we will deal with. Then we'll also have a presentation from the department. I just hope by that time, I'm sure the minister would have also joined us because there was confirmation of her attendance, which will then focus on the performance with regard to ICASA. It's always important to remind ourselves that this meeting is at our instance as a committee, flowing from the engagements in the BRRR. So as part of continuation of our oversight work, these were matters that we isolated and we thought we should still come back to them. So in this regard, we would expect a presentation that responds to the issues that the committee was concerned with. As it is the case, please feel welcomed and share with us. Honourable members, you've received the presentations well in advance. This helps us to spend less time on the presentation but more time on engaging the issues that are put before us. For that reason, given that there's also a sitting this afternoon, I will allocate 30 minutes to the presentation. That's as it relates to CETA. Acting DG, so we'll relate this to the minister. As it relates to the department, we'll take 20 minutes of presentation, so that we are able to engage. I can see the DG is trying to plead for more time, not as no time. We have had an opportunity to look at the presentations, so we'll want to spend more time on engaging the presentations. As I said, please feel welcomed. I was also told that there are also a number of stakeholders from the sector, including representation from the institution supporting democracy, as we'll be dealing with also the ICASA-related matter. So you are all welcomed in that scope. CETA, I already chair, I suppose. You will do as we do, not the whole delegation. I know some delegations are quite huge, but just the highlight, as you introduce the subject in that scope.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We thanks for welcoming us to the committee. I'm joined by the Chief Executive Officer, the Chief Financial Officer, of course, both of them acting, and I've also got an Executive Director who's the Chairman of the ICTI RDI Subcommittee of the Board. I've got the Executive who is in charge of internal audit because of the issues that we are going to focus on, and the Chief Risk Officer in attendance. Without much ado, Honorable Chair, I just thought by way of introduction, I'm just to introduce the presentation. Just to sort of, in 2 minutes, so realizing that the time we have constraints with time, just perhaps though I know that we're going to focus on the AG findings, on organizational capacity, and CETA also as a going concern. I think matter-of-factly, though we did not get a qualification, we did get matters of emphasis. It is important to understand that by way of background, I thought it was important that the AG said there was 13.6 billion rands which was spent on IT for the financial year 2017-2018, but I know that in the previous financial year 2017-2018, there was close to 19 billion rands spent on IT by the entire government, but only a quarter of that went through CETA, on about 5 billion, if you look at what is our annual turnover. And of course, there has been massive irregular expenditure according to the AG. Of all the ODTs, there were 63% of various government departments and entities. There were 63% of ODTs that had weak IT governance, and 8% who had very weak IT controls. This is across government, not just CETA, which for me presents, as I say, an opportunity cost for our organization. And 80% of the IT spend that we do spend CETA is to service legacy projects, which is a problematic issue. And also what is important in context is that out of the 32 or 33 government departments that are there, CETA is only servicing about 15 to 17 of the government departments. That is excluding, as you know, that we have 115 provincial departments, 257 municipalities. We have hardly touched that surface. So we're just doing but a small portion of government. Of course, everybody does their own thing invariably, and when CETA, in terms of the Presidential Commission, was set up, was to try to see that if we can be in a position to be able to break down the silos. In terms of resources and stability, I would like to say that when I came to CETA, I have seen the departure of three chief procurement officers, two chief executive officers, and two directors. And it has become very difficult to attract anybody to come to try to see if they can come and join and work for us because of the contested space. Even when we do advertise, some of the people at the last minute to turn out and say no. We've decided not to come and join ourselves. But we've been able to attract people from the private sector, like the acting CEO, will be filling up the post by the end of the month, of the chief procurement officer and the company secretary. We've tried to move with haste in trying to capacitate the department. And I know in one of the slides you'll see that when we did the reorganization and remodeling of the business, we were not in a position, and largely affected by the change in administration between the 5th and the 6th, to be in a position to be able to fill up the relevant positions. But also with the change in terms of the business model, the intention is also to reskill the organization. because some of our practices are so antiquated. If we were to take the example of what we learned with the trying to clear the backlog of the certificates with the Department of Higher Education, where we had a backlog of about 180,000, we discovered that there were only two people who were conversant with that project. And one of them had retired and one was on the verge of retirement. We literally had to start from scratch, as it were. And of course, I can say that we have been in a position to be able to reduce the certificate backlog from 180,000. We're still battling with a small number of about between 20 to 30 thousand. So what is going to be the big challenge is also to capacitate the organization invariably. And also what is important is that we've been unable to refresh the legacy projects because we've never had a tariff increase for the past 10 years or so. So people are still paying prices for the services that we render that are still 10 years old. And one of the issues is that we have a problem in our ability to be able to continue to provide the service and meet our obligations. We even battled amongst ourselves to think that since we're a Schedule 3A, should we maybe change the way they are of our status so that we can be in a position to be able to raise money any other particular way. But nonetheless, we are a Schedule 3A. We have to live with the means that we have at our disposal. On the previous year, with the finding of the findings from AXA, from the AG, AXA, Attorney General of South Africa, we quickly, as early as last year, made sure that we employed an internal auditor because the previous internal auditor had to unfortunately leave us because we could not understand with the inherent problems. The internal auditor was not playing a critical role, as you would know that the external auditors do rely largely in terms of the work that the internal auditor does. So we have a fully manned internal audit. So our ability to be able to generate sufficient capital affects our CAPEX program, which is almost next to zero. Of course, the new business model is try to change the organization, not to be perceived, because there seems to be the cycle entirely of the entire organization that we are a procurement agency, and everybody seems to think that we are a procurement agency, and then we move away from investigating the organization, because when we came in, just for the refresh, I don't want to lament, we had to replace a board that had to be removed because there was an SIU investigation. Over a period of 3 years, we paid the SIU, I think, close to 50 million rands when they were investigating us, because we found that there were employees within the organization who were also doing business with CETA, or some of them were doing business outside. So we had to do a lot of cleanup, and as a result, we hollowed out procurement section, and also critical because we were 3,200 people. What is critical to us is people with human capital management, because this seems to be where the javelin throwing seems to be happening a lot. So we are on that particular path, as I say, that we were a bit sidestepped by the change in terms of the fifth and the sixth administration for us to be able to capacitate and the rationalization of state-owned entities and combination of some of the government departments that we couldn't. We tried to see if we can't augment timelessly so that some of the critical positions are meant. But the path ahead now has been cleared by our shareholders so that we can be in a position to do that. I just thought I should just give that little bit of background, Chairman, of the Commission, and I'll ask the CEO to go to the meat of the of the presentation. We had prepared it, and thanks for your indulgence. That we thought we, because most of the members are new to the portfolio committee, that we will go and look a little bit into the reason and the reason for existence of CETA, but that can before some perhaps some other time, so that we focus on the AG findings and what it is that we're actually doing to try to solve the problems. Thank you, Chair. See you.
Thank you very much,
Chair. Chairperson, honourable members. Thank you for the opportunity to come and again engage on a one-on-one with the honourable members to look into issues that were raised in the previous sitting of the Portfolio Committee. As the chairperson has indicated, we don't have enough time. The presentation is obviously bulky, as we wanted to also make sure that we cater for the members who are new to the committee. And so we will consider the bigger part of the presentation as read, so that we can then zoom into the critical issues that had been raised, as the chairperson has just alluded. So one, we will then move into the issue around our business performance, which we will move into, and then we will then look most importantly into the various AG findings and how we deal with them. The way we have organized our presentation was to really start looking more also into the solution part of things, to say how do we then make sure that we go about resolving some of the critical issues. So the chairperson has already given a clear context in terms of the organization, where we're coming from and so forth. So if we look at slide number 2, obviously it's just the program that we wanted to run through. I will skip through the overview of CETA, as I will consider that has been read. That talks to, you know, the various, the act itself and all of that. I will skip also through the governance issues. Suffice to say that yes, we've got a solid governance. As the chairperson is here, we've got the various structures of the board, the various subcommittees that are very effective in making sure that we continue to remain the organization that we are, and then move into the performance. But the chairperson has just also touched on issues around the organization. Organizational capacity to be able to execute. And so if we go to slide number 14, honorable members, that then talks to that organizational structure that we are working from. I think in the last session that we had, the issue was then to say, you know, can we then also have a clear look at the structure, as we believe as the members that the structure will then talk to, you know, the various functions and how we are structured. So indeed, as the chairperson has explained, the transitioning obviously from the 5th administration to the 6th has also seen us implementing this new blueprint or business model, both at national as well as provincial functions that we do. And so we have now at this stage at the very executive level already now started working on making sure that we've got our CPO in place. Those processes have gone through, making sure that we've got our company secretary in place. That processes we have gone through, the interviews and all of that. It's a question of now having an appointment. And then, of course, we've got the CFO and the CEO positions that we are still ongoing in terms of making sure that those positions are being filled. So we thought it was important that we can then show that, of course, we do have a lot of acting positions. As you can see, over 40% of the red positions, the boxes, will be then the acting positions. I think that was then noted in the last presentation that we had. So I will move from there. We also got a few of the FTC positions, obviously, that are short term, that will then also then need to be filled as we move along. So I will move then. I will move from there to then move into, as I said, the governance issues. I will leave those out. They are very generic, well-known issues in terms of how we function, you know, the board and so forth. I think the one issue that we had included, honourable members, was the issue around, on slide number 18 onwards, the issue around some of the legislative issues that we believe for CETA to be able to function as a full-fledged organisation, you know, currently, but also in the future, looking into the repurposed CETA that we all look at, that there will be, you know, certain legislative tweakings that will need to happen. And we can see the impact of that already as we go by, you know, delivering the various services in the provinces and nationally. So I will not enumerate, you know, those legislative issues one by one, but that touches on issues around, you know, the provincial focus, that focuses on issues that we are dealing with today, which is some of the state-owned company to state-owned company engagements. Today, when we look at the work that we do, either with the BBI or the Centec, that is now the issue that we are trying to deal with, to say, are we then able to have SOC-to-SOC engagements, and can we then engage Treasury in making sure that we've got those working? We've looked also at the triple Ps that we believe have not worked as much as we thought they would, and we should be able to then look into that. And as we sit in the ICT space, honorable members, especially as we talk about, you know, digital transformation and all the developments around 4IR, that also then raises questions around how do we then do ICT procurement itself, you know, given the agility and the flexibility that is required in making sure that we can acquire, you know, services as and when we require them. So I will not enumerate all of those. We can rather discuss some of those. But some of these issues also talk to, you know, the arrangements that we have with the department in terms of making sure that we do get paid for the services that we provide. So often you find that we take almost the entire financial year before payments come through for the services that we have provided. And obviously that has got an impact on our ability to be able to do the work. One of the big issues that we've been dealing with the shareholder and GTOC at this point in time has been the transversals as well, the transversal contract, which has been a very, very big issue, because that begins to also talk to the transitioning from DPSA of CETA to the DTPS and some of the grey areas that remain. So we have seen a huge impact there in terms of you know, transversal contracts that either are not being adjudicated in time and so forth. And especially at this time of the year, we find that we're very much involved in those engagements. If we go to slide number 20, that then also talks to our incorporation. That then also begins to talk to the CETA Act itself in terms of the regulations to group all our services as mandatory services. As you know, our services, much earlier on in the slide, we show some of the must and may services. But if you look into the transitioning or the repurposing of CETA, you will then require that perhaps most of the services that we provide will then be summed up as mandatory services, so that we can then be able to deliver those services on top of the infrastructure. The chairperson, as the last point, has just spoken about the whole notion of the Schedule 3A, that also has got its own restrictions in terms of whether we can access finances and so forth. And especially now, when you look into the need to invest in infrastructure, I think you know, I see Honourable Malisha here. The last time we met in the session, we were talking again about home affairs in terms of, you know, infrastructure, software-defined networks, requirements for uninterruptible networks and all of that. And so that then becomes very, very important for us, that we can be able to invest in that. And I think as we get into the next part of the presentation, which is the performance from a finance perspective, the CFO will then touch on some of those areas in terms of how we then structure as an organization. So we are saying that financially we are sound, but of course, you know, our cash flow does become a problem given how we deal with the various departments, issues of payments and so on, issues of almost fiscal dumping at the end of the financial year, where we get the huge lumps of payments. And so you will see that our performance, therefore, in terms of cash flow, is a little bit skewed. In that then we start very, very high in April, and then we go down quite significantly to pick up again towards the end of the financial year, because payments are happening at those times. And so those are just some of the issues. And of course, we need to invest in various infrastructure, whether it's hosting and secure operations, whether it's networks as I said, or now automating our services to make sure that there is easy access by the citizenry in accessing the services. And on that note, I would then move to slide number 22, which then begins to talk to the actual financial performance. And I would ask Andre, our CFO, to maybe quickly run us through that. Andre?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's working. Chairperson, just in terms of this, the one thing that I want to highlight on slide 22 is basically you see the cash and cash equivalents decrease from 1.137 billion at the year end to about 623 million. A big portion of that is obviously then the SLAs that it's not signed and that we haven't been able to bill some of those, and that has impacted us. And secondly also is we had some of our investments that we had to do. Then on that point, you see that our debtors, our trade and other receivables is 1.694 billion. Now, in essence, is that a big portion of that, only about 898 million of that represents a debtor's book. The rest of it represents accruals, which we accrue and we can't necessarily bill because the business agreements and the service level agreements are not signed. That's obviously a critical aspect for us. And then obviously on the 898 million, there's been very extensive debt collection measures that has been put in place, which was quite a big improvement from previous years. However, we still need to improve further because we want to convert the whole amount in cash. I think that's a key thing. Just in terms of that, you know, if you convert that amount to cash, the first 956.7 million will go towards our creditors. So in essence, we need to, our operating expenses, 2 months worth of operating expenses is approximately a billion rand. So for us, we first need to cover our operating expenses. We have to capacitate the organizations. You've seen all the organization structure. So when we convert it to cash, that's the second thing that we need to do. We also obviously need to then, apart from that, we then what's left, we need to up our cash levels because the current cash levels is still low, so that's a portion that will go into that, which leaves not enough left for us. Like the chairperson and the CEO has alluded to, there's not enough then for us to fund our CAPEX requirements and for CITA, the renewal and the repositioning of CITA, where we really need to digitize and go into the future, set us up for the future. From that point of view, I think that the we have to consider our options. That the 3A reclassification to a Shell 2 entity will take some time. So that may be to go for specific projects to National Treasury, whether it's then to ask for to centralize certain funds towards CETA, because when it goes to the department, that also is a delay, causes a delay in us actually delivering the service, and that's not necessarily go towards the, and then second, and then also to consider maybe conditional grants where appropriate, obviously linked to specific service delivery and specific outcomes that need to be achieved. So that's just a summary of the statement of financial position. If we go to slide 23, you notice that we have made a loss of 8 million for the quarter. Our cumulative loss is 122 million. Considering the one aspect that contributes that is if we don't have a service level agreement signed, we basically accrue and recognize revenue up to cost. So this is the profit more margin that we then charge on those service level agreements. We do not accrue for that. So that's a contributor, big contributor towards the loss. And then some of our projects have been delayed slightly, which means the revenue related to those projects has been delayed as well. But a big contributor is the service level agreement. That's just a summary of that. Then I just want to, then on the cash flow slide, I'm just going to talk to the graph because the other things we've mainly addressed. On the graph on slide 24, when we started out the year, in the previous year there was quite a bit of investment in CAPEX projects, which means that reduced our cash flow levels as well. So if we now go to the graph, you'll see on a monthly basis, when we started out the year, there was a huge gap between our cash levels for this year and our cash levels for the previous year. However, because of very stringent cost containment controls that we implemented and very, very stringent debt control, an intensive focus on debt collection, we have managed to close the gap. And if you see between August and September, there's significantly less gap between our cash flow levels this year and what it was in previous years. So I think that's in essence. But the key thing is we do generate enough cash to meet our operating commitments. When it comes to the investment in infrastructure, where we fall short, we do not generate enough cash to invest in our infrastructure. On slide 25, that's just comparison of the age analysis between the end of October, September, and March. In essence, is that there's a lot of focus in the debt management. I'm not going to discuss that in detail. This full note is the slide 26 is our debtors. That's just our top debtors on a national level and on a provincial level. Then on slide 27, that is our CAPEX. We have managed to spend 147 million this year on CAPEX. The majority, 133 million, relates to our infrastructure. However, from a CETA perspective, for us to renew and the status of the infrastructure, that's really very little compared to what is needed. So I think that's really, and that's obviously needed to maintain our revenue stream and to reposition ourselves towards the digitalization and modernization of the organization. Cost saving, we have spoken about cost saving initiatives. So that slide, slide 28, I'm not going to discuss in detail. Then just in terms of interventions to address irregular expenditure, and I'll just maybe note on previous and wasteful expenditure. On irregular expenditure, when the loss control committee was established, there was a huge backlog on consequence management. So since the establishment of the loss control committee, there was 55 cases that was recommended for disciplinary action, and so out of those 55 cases, it was really 44 cases that was then referred to our HR to follow through on disciplinary cases. During the year. But it's also a continuous thing because during the year there was 27 cases that were detected. Out of the 27 cases, there was 10 cases related to prior years and 17 cases related to the current year. A big contributor, and if I have to say, it's the capacitation of the organisation, and that includes capacitation in our lines of business and our SEM. So we've seen the organigram, and it's a lot of those are, so that's a big contributor. I just want to note these two cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Now, irregular expenditure, we don't make losses, we go through disciplines, but if employees leave the organization, and it's irregular expenditure, we don't have to make losses, then it's difficult to pursue them through the course, but where there's losses made, and there's two cases where in fruitless and wasteful expenditure we do at the moment where we actually pursue the employees that left the organization, that we started the process to recover the money from them. So we do take the losses, any losses, very seriously, but also irregular expenditure very seriously. And the big backlog was cleared, however, many cases where there's, I think after you see there's 107 cases and then 55 cases that we dealt with. Out of that 52 cases that's left, there's 4 where we recommended internal audit investigation, then there's another 18 where we wanted more information, and the rest is very, very old cases which we struggle, where the people has left the organization and it's been difficult to discipline, but also if you look at that, some very, very old. If you're trying to get the documentation, it's because it's so ill, and the backlog that was. But I think in terms of cases, loss control committee is really making a huge effort to deal with consequence management. Just on consequence, the next slide, page 30. This is obviously then loss control committee handing over to our HR department. And there you see just a summary of the results of the cases that's been referred to that been finalized, not been referred, but that has so far been finalized by our HR department. And then I think that's basically that portion. Can I hand both back to the CEO to take us through the...
Yeah. Thank you very much, Andre, for that. Chair, I'm aware of time as well. So just coming to moving from slide number 31, and I will just run through those, is the service delivery issues, because this was one of the issues that we needed to look at to say, but how are we then delivering the services? So we've really just stated a number of services that supply, from the presidential inauguration mobile apps to licensing and permitting platforms. I think all of that is on the slide to go through e-participation platforms, and we can talk about those, the e-recruitment platform, really to start looking into how do we bring efficiencies around, like your infamous Z83. How do we then start, coming up with very innovative, e-recruitment processes that are smart, data sharing platforms that we have put in place, the e-cabinet is one of those that we are currently looking at also making smart, because today it's more like a repository of the various documents and so on that is very, very secure, and then looking into how do we make it more smart that it can be more interoperable with other services. This is at the national level. At the provincial level, doing a lot of work in making sure that we roll out infrastructure that will enable connectivity, but also that will enable that the services that we talk about are then accessible to the ordinary South Africans. And so that really talks largely to the broadband initiatives for the Eastern Cape, at that level, Limpopo, the Western Cape, which has been running for quite some time, the work that we do with colleagues in KZN Broadband, where we're beginning to look into SOC-to-SOC partnerships in making sure that we roll out and build on all the existing infrastructure and broadband initiatives like your SA Connect and so forth. And then, of course, the Gauteng Broadband as the other, and just indicating the size that we have done in those provinces. And then, of course, looking into the various partnership opportunities, as I've said, around our sister SOCs, state-owned companies, some of the EDZ, economic development zones, like the Dube Trade Port, the East London Industry Development, where we're looking at layer 3 services, including internet provision and so forth. The slide after that, slide number 37 onward, I will not get into that. That really talks to the work that we've been doing around cloud hosting. So we've been driving a huge initiative around migrating various departments into the cloud. If you look at slide number 38, it gives some examples of the departments that we have started looking at. And then that obviously then takes us into the AG action plans. And at this stage, I would like to then invite our internal audit executive to maybe just run us through quickly some of the AG findings, which is very crucial.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, honorable members. As the chairperson of the board indicated that CTAG received financially unqualified audit findings, financially unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance and performance, we have developed an action plan to make sure that we address such issues. The main issues that we have is mainly supply chain, as I indicated under controlled environment on slide number 39. This is where we have a challenge with the capacity problems from supply chain. We have challenges where procurement processes are not initiated timely. We also have challenges where we have, because of capacity problem, we have one person handling lots of transactions. So that's why we have lots of errors. That's the reason why the AG picked up some of the findings. So these are mainly root causes why we have audit findings from the AG. At the high level implementation plan that we have is we have developed an action plan, which is more detailed action plan. Each and every executive member at CETA is responsible for the action plan. We have the audit findings also, we are the one as internal audit, we are following up independently, making sure that they don't just close the findings to circumvent repeat findings. And such a treating report is being reported to the EXCO every month so that we can track the progress. And then on the quarterly basis, we report to the board committees such as audit committee, and then that is also part of the board agenda to make sure that at least we track the audit findings. In addition to that, honorable members, we also review audit annual financial statements as well as performance reports before submission to the AG to make sure that at least the high-level errors are being picked up and are being addressed before we submit to the AG. And on a quarterly basis, we also report to the DTPS department, monitoring department, where we also report the outcomes and the progress thereof. On slide number 38, on slide number 40 and 41, Chair, sorry, this is mainly all about the detailed action plan that we have. The main one, as I indicated, we have staff capacity under supply chain. We've got a program called stabilization, where we actually try to stabilize the department, making sure that we fill up some of the critical positions within supply chain management department. And then in addition to that, we've got an alternative plan where we want to also insource some of the resources, especially critical resources, whereby we are unable to actually fill up the positions immediately. We also trying to have, we have a program called the Oracle ERP module program, whereby we also try to implement the module to make sure that we get our assets. And then the other challenge that we have is document management. We have implemented some of the controls whereby we scan some of the documents, and then we make sure that supply chain management staff members, especially at the senior level, they review the files to make sure that the file is complete. So before we file the file under document management center, we make sure that the file is being reviewed and all of the documents are contained. So I will also just go to slide number 41 just to look at mainly the predominantly IT services findings. The IT service continuity, this is all about the disaster recovery plan. We are busy reviewing it to make sure that it's in place, it's in line with to address the AG findings. We are on track in implementing IT security management findings, patch management, change management, and ICT governance. So this is what we actually do on the daily basis to make sure that we address the audit findings. So on a high level, that is actually what we are doing to address the AG findings. Slide number 42 is just the stats about how far are we in terms of addressing the audit findings. Some of the findings are the findings that will be able to address them at year end, but we are on track in implementing the action plan. And then slide number 43 to 45 is mainly all about the methods of investigations that we have, and then the stats regarding the cases that we have handed the case to the Hawks, to SEPs, and some of them are being investigated by IT. As you are aware, honorable members, that we have a public service anti-corruption strategy. In line with that, we have established that the system to ensure that we encourage members, our staff members, our suppliers, also the public at large, to make sure that they report any cases of unethical behavior, cases of criminal offenses or dishonesty that they identify, to make sure that we maintain independency. We have appointed an external service provider who tracks all of these calls, and then they report to us for investigation, and then we make sure that we allow the whistleblowers to report independently to make sure that they are protected in terms of Protected Disclosure Act from our employee side. That organization that we have appointed is Vuvuzela, is accredited by the Institute, the Ethics Institute of South Africa. So they make sure that the whistleblowers are protected. In addition to that, this is mainly the whistleblowing hotline is the one that contributed largely to the cleanup that we had between 2017 to 2018. Honorable members will realize on the stats and from page 44 to 45 that we've got some of the cases or most of the cases that were reported between 2017 and 2018. These cases are predominantly coming from the cleanup that we had because of the whistleblowing hotline that we have implemented. So most of the cases are still in progress, they're still investigating, the IP is investigating HOCs as well as SEPs. We are tracking the investigation. I will hand back to the CEO.
Okay, thanks Chair. I think, there's quite a lot of action that is happening. We can talk about around the actions that are being taken. But I think what is important also, just in closing on that, is that on that slide 45, you can see that there is also, you know, recoverability that is beginning to happen. This was one of the issues that was raised. You can see that in respect of case number 3 there, we've been able to, get about 800,000 that was recovered from a former employee, so and we continue to make sure that we do recover the funds as well, even when employees leave. So given the 2 minutes that I've got, Chair, I think colleagues from finance as well as internal audit have already touched on some of the, you know, organizational stabilization focus areas. I think Freddie has just been talking about the issues around supply chain, also talking about the AG findings in relation largely to the area of supply chain. So what we have done is that we identified 3 key areas as an organization in this FY that we are now focusing on, that if we change these 3 areas, we should really be able to have a very clean audit and actually be able to deliver the services that we aspire to deliver. And one of them, obviously, is supply chain, which is very, very critical, and we've developed various action plans around how we deal with the supply chain today. The second one is the commercial issue, and then, of course, the human capital issue. The subsequent slide from slide number 50 really then gets into the actual action plans in terms of where exactly the issues are, what are the challenges, and then how do we then go about addressing them. So on slide number 52, in terms of the supply chain management, we have outlined the 4 key areas in blue that we are currently driving, you know, including things like your delegation of authority, your STM policy, and making sure that we've got clear-cut, streamlined processes that we follow so that we can then be able to track all of these things as Freddie was saying. We'll then also look into the issue around automation, which we believe is important, that if we remove the human element and make sure that we've got robust systems that make sure that we can then be more effective and ensure efficiency in delivery. And then, of course, that moves into the actual org design of the SCM. And if you go back to the structure, then you will see that we're looking into very key strategic positions in that regard. And so the action plans are outlined. Slide number 53 obviously just gives the timelines in terms of the various activities that we want to achieve and how we want to do those. And then going down to slide number 56, that's just the whole issue around the whole human resource
area, preparing ourselves for the digital transformation and making sure that we deliver in that space. And then that goes through to the ITU, which is where we look into SMME participation, and then the implementation timeline thereof. The other areas I will leave out because those are more around the cloud program that we've got. So on that note, I will stop. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. I would now open up for members to engage the presentation. Honorable Mutembu. Honorable Mutembu, if you want. Honorable McKenzie. Honorable Kumbu. Honorable Fagu, then Honorable Madisha, followed by Honorable Mulala. Honorable Kubegajenda. Okay. Right, in that order. Honorable Mutembu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Greetings to you and the House. I just want to welcome a presentation, firstly, and also indicate that to me, presentation shows a positive direction. Even though the Chairperson indicated that there is a massive irregular expenditure, but it shows a positive direction. But I just want to go to page 14 on the structure itself. The structure shows that there is a lot need to be done. There is a lot of acting and a lot of vacant positions, but a presentation indicated that there is a plan for correcting what we see on the structure. That means to me it's a good work that driving to a positive direction. I think they are working towards getting a clean audit when I'm listening. Since they got an unqualified audit outcome, but you when you're listening you hear that there are means to go to getting a clean audit. That also shows a positive direction. For now, Chairperson, let me pause there.
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. And thank you, Sita, for the presentation. When that slide on the acting positions and the vacant positions, it's quite a horrendous slide to look at with all those deep shades of red. Is it the government moratorium that's stopping you recruiting and filling those positions? Is it because people don't want to join CETA? Or what is the problem with that? And then the people who are acting in those positions, are they remunerated as if they were serving in those positions confirmed? In other words, is their salary adjusted for the extra responsibilities? And I don't know if you have this information, but what's the average time that people have been serving in these roles, in these acting positions? How long have they been there, just generally? And clearly, to put somebody into an acting role, one would assume that they're capable of doing the job, and in fact, it's a good tryout to see how well they do. What's stopping you confirming any of these people in the posts? Just give me an answer there. Then, in terms of your revenue growth, let me just see if I understand this. The reason why your revenue is so low is not meeting budget is because you've entered into contracts with government departments, you've as part of those contracts, you need to sign service level agreements that will say you will deliver X amount of services, and those agreements haven't been signed. So therefore, you haven't been able to build the revenue. What I don't understand is how you can start to deliver services when you haven't got all your paperwork in order. I mean, I would assume that, you know, you'd be aware that nobody would pay if a service level agreement hadn't been signed. Have you put steps in place to make sure in terms of the contract process that you've covered that base? Then also in terms of growth, you've suggested that, and I found it quite a novel and revolutionary proposal that's bound to ruffle some feathers. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're saying government must take its entire ICT budget and give it to CETA and say, there. So within that ICT budget, there's 100 billion for home affairs, there's 100 billion for education, there's 100 billion for health. Is that what you're saying? And then you would then administrate that program on behalf of the departments, or the budget on behalf of the departments. Is that what you're saying as a move to grow CETA? Then I can see why there would be resistance from departments. You know, it seems scope creep, heading into their areas of responsibility. Your relationship with Home Affairs has been particularly fraught and fraught. AU, not fraught, fraught with problems. And we had a presentation, you know, where we went to Home Affairs, we sat and they all complained, and I did a little bit of research and found that, in fact, the banks had more downtime than Home Affairs did with CETA. Have you fixed that relationship? Do you find the reluctance from other government departments, the impact or the echoes of what Home Affairs experience is purported to be, does that impact on your relationship with other government departments? I'll give you an example. I went for a passport into Home Affairs. It was crazy in Barrack Street because their systems were down. I went in a week later to pick up the passport. It was like there was nobody there because the systems were working, according to the people behind the counter. So clearly that uptime is critical. Then another question, there was an issue around Dr. Mahapi and senior executives of CETA being physically threatened, your families and your own person. Has that does that threat still exist, or has it been managed or mitigated? You came before the committee doing your performance plans and said your intention was to electronic digitalize the procurement process, so there would be less human intervention in that. How far along that, in terms of a percentage, how far along the road are you in terms of that project? 80%, 70% to the point where the whole thing is automated, that e-portal into procurement. Then you mentioned late payment by government departments. That's inexcusable, in my opinion. Do you have any idea of how, I mean, I see your cash flow is basically half of where it should be. Do you have any figures or anything on if government paid their bills, what that would do to your cash flow and how it would help your income stream? The margin contribution that's delayed by not signing the SLAs, will that then be billed in later the year, so you should see the correction coming through by the end of the year? Then you did, I remember we had a bit of laughter around it in the committee, and Chairperson, this is my last question with your indulgence, I'm not being political. There was a very successful collaboration between CETA and the Western Cape government. Where you rolled out a system, you connected the facilities, you got a network going, and it's working very well from what I understand. In fact, so much so that CETA was almost accused of favoring the Western Cape at one time or another. It's clearly a good system and it's clearly worked. I don't see the Western Cape on your list of debtors. Does that mean you're not delivering any service to them, or do they just pay their bills on time? just saying, Chambers. Yes, and my last question, Chair. Can I just ask, why aren't other provinces following that lead? Clearly it's a model that works, it's a successful implementation. Why aren't you getting other provinces buying into that? Hopefully they have the money to do so. And just last thing, in terms of your ethics line, can you tell me how many allegations were received in a given period? So whatever that period is that you pick, can you tell me how many allegations in that time? Thank you for the indulgence, Chairperson.
Honourable Kumbu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me start from the clean-up process. I just want to check as to whether there are other cases which have been withdrawn, if it's possible, because there are cases which have been reported. I just want to check as to whether there are other cases which have been withdrawn, and then if they are there, how many are those cases? Again, on slide number 29, we were talking of some disciplinary actions which have been taken from officials. I just want to check as to whether this disciplinary process was only for officials, or there are other ex-co members or some board members who were also subject to this disciplinary process. Coming to the Loss Control Committee, as part of the missing, I just want to check as to whether this Loss Control, this committee, was only established after you have appeared before the previous portfolio committee, the last time when you were here. I just want to understand that, because I want to establish that. On slide number 16, you spoke of a resignation of two directors. Just want to establish as to whether, because seemingly there are problems in terms of attracting people to CETA. I just want to check as to whether these two resignations were voluntarily or not. If you check on slide number 14, there are three fixed term contracts there, and you are saying those three fixed term contracts, I think they can expire any time just from now. When do you think you can fill in these three vacancies, which are fixed terms? Yes, it is. Yeah, on the current debt, I think covered by what my colleagues have been talking about in terms of the debt. I think, Chairperson, let me pause this. Okay.
Honorable Fako.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think, Chairperson, the presentation has improved a lot from the last presentation. I think it has responded to many of the questions that we had as a committee. We must appreciate Chairperson and Acting CEO. One can see light now, because one of the most important things that we need to state problems but also come up with solutions. And I think this report gives us that. When you look on, I understand that the entity is currently in a process of rebuilding and repositioning itself and rebranding itself. So it will, I think the acting CEO has responded to a lot of those questions that I had in terms of slide 14. He has responded to some issues to say that the acting CEO, they were interviewed, they are waiting for the appointment, the acting CFO and CEO and other criticals. And there was an appointment of the director for internal audit, which is something good. And I think that if you are trying to rebrand the entity, it helps us a lot to see that in the most critical issues, especially if you can go on slide 49, which talks about the organizational stabilization focus areas, which is your supply chain. A CFO will be appointed, commercial, which would look at the product cost and determination of prices. CEO will touch on that, human capital. I think for me, these are the most three critical areas that were hanging. So if you can, and I see that as you are moving forward, you are focusing on these three areas, which will respond to a lot of issues, like your issue of your service levels agreement, which risk really is something that you need to look at. But also, Chairperson, I think as a portfolio committee, we need to have bilaterals between ourselves and these departments that are not paying, with bilateral with other committees, to focus on these departments that are not paying CETA, because you will see that towards the end of the financial year, fiscal dumping when it comes to CETA, because they are not paying. It is because, Minister, it is because of the service level agreement. I think it's one thing that we need to focus on for them to function, and I think it's part of what they have said. But also, if you, one of the things that I would say that acting CEO is that in looking at the vacant positions, although you can attract new people, but also you need to look at, I know many universities here in South Africa are advanced in terms of technology. You've got young people that are very advanced in technology. You need to take them as interns maybe and try to rebuild them so that you can fill in this position. I've seen that Abo Ikasa and other entities like your centers have done that. But also, one would appreciate the proposed partnership that you have with Abo Centec. Abo Centec, we know that they have received clean audits in the past financial year. I see you are trying to have also partnership with the East London ITZ, where I come from, the Durban Port, OPPI. So I think it goes to the right direction, because we need to make sure that as we move forward that we share good practices. So these partnerships that you are looking into, it's good partnerships. And I also think slide 49 also covers me to what the CFO has said in terms of the commercial, because this issue of debt of 1.9 billion, we've got this debt of 1.69 billion that the CFO has touched on. But I think the solution to this is the service level agreement that we have talked about. So for me, when I look at rebranding and repositioning of CETA, I think we are moving into the right direction. But also one would appreciate when it comes to consequence management, where we see that you have taken action to those that are alleged to be corrupt. One appreciates that, because we don't want people to steal and there's no consequence management, but we can see that as well. But thank you, Chair.
Honorable Matish.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and all here present. Permit me, Chairperson, to basically begin by thanking these ladies and gentlemen. Over the very many years past.
Use the mic, Honorable.
Okay.
So that you're on record. I can see you're grabbing water first.
No. Because there's no mic, this can be one. But like I was saying, Chairperson, I think they are doing well. Indeed, one has looked into their report over the very many years past, and it has been a problem. And like the chairperson there says, we frequently have indicated that they were not doing well. Oh, the minister is here. So, juxtaposing those particular reports and the ones that we have today, I think there is a movement. So I think that needs to be recognized, Chairperson. Now, there are a number of identified problems. For example, they indicate that business accruals are not sound. And as they further put it, cash levels must be, permit me to say, upped. Okay? They must be taken higher. So that their existence and their movement forward, their successes can be realized. Now the question that one puts is, what do they propose, both the legislatures and parliament, to do so that the committee, this committee, can go and present those particular proposals to parliament? Because I've not heard that. If they kindly could give us the proposals that they want us to put forward. Now, they indicate that there is no service level agreement. Now, that, as you put it, creates problems. Now, of course there are problems, but I have not heard the proposals that you are putting on the table to say, since this kind of problems permeate your existence really, this is what you believe has got to be looked into to address those particular problems. On slide 29, you indicate there about irregular and wasteful expenditure. And you have identified a number of areas there. Okay? But then, I have not heard you basically say, this is what you have done. You indicated that yes, there is a disciplinary committee that has been put in place to do 1, 2, 3. But then, albeit that is the case, you have not risen here to say, this is what we do once we find those people who are involved in the stealing of the money, you know, plastic bags and so on, etc., etc. This is what we do to ensure that that has got to be resolved. That, yes, there are irregularities, but the news indicates that very many people simply left the theater. But I have not seen there where you say that to access the money that they may have taken after they will have left, this is what you are doing. Okay? You have, for example, somewhere indicated, you know, the 800,000 rand, if I'm not mistaken, you did raise that. Okay? That, yes, we identified that. But albeit that was the case, in very many other instances, people have taken and left, but then you are not saying that this is what has been done to ensure that we are able to get those particular monies. It means William Madisha can come and work there, and after a few months take and leave, and you don't take plastic back, fill it up, and leave, and you then are not doing anything at all. If you kindly could explain that which will have been done, or that which you are doing, to make sure that this irregular and wasteful expenditures, basically, how they are actually being dealt with. But I must say, Chairperson, that we fought against them in the past, but then I want to emphasize that, yes, there is a movement forward, and we need to acknowledge that. Thank you, Chair.
Now, Honorable Mlala.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Let me also start by appreciating what you have done today. I think it's different from what you presented last time. It's a work in progress, and I think I'm impressed with the presentation. I hope we had more time to actually go through the details. But having said that, I think we need to just a few clarities or correction, if you like. If you go to slide number 14, I think my colleagues have covered me, except to say that in your presentation, you said it's about 40% vacancy. But when I do my calculation here, it's 50%, actually, more 10% more. Because what you have done, you combined people who are acting, not as vacancies and the vacant positions separately. But combine the two, you'll see that it's around 50%, 49.something% when I do my calculation. I think that's the because from where I'm sitting, it was 23 acting, 5 vacant. So total is 28 out of 54. This is what you presented. So just a correction on in that regard. And then on slide 18, legislative challenges. You don't have any legal person at CETA, because for me, these proposals that you're making need to be processed. See, legislation takes a long time. By this time, you should be somewhere moving towards presenting that to the minister, so that the minister can bring it to parliament. So I think if you speed up that, unless if you say, because I've not seen any legal person in your structure yet, if there's anyone, speed up the process. I think that would be my recommendation there. And then we go to the other issue on legislative challenges. How does this challenge relate to your organogram? I hope I'm clear. Maybe if I need to elaborate, you'll ask me to do that. The issue of the SLA, I think my colleagues have touched on that. But I also need to know, you said, the CFO said their operating expenses is around 2 billion. Just the operational expenses, 2 billion. Now, if you look at your organogram versus what you are spending, there's no balance there. It might mean you need more people, because you can't spend 2 billion with all the departments. Remember, you are saving all the departments. You said you have not even gone to municipalities. So, which means you still need to do a lot on organogram. Besides the vacancy rate that you have, you might need to review that structure to meet the demand. Otherwise, you'll stay at where you are and then leave out municipalities and other structures. But if you are to go down, then it means you'll need to review that structure, because the structure must speak to the 2 billion and your strategic objectives. If you look at your services, look at the money you spend on operations, and then you look at your organogram, something is missing. I don't want to go into detail, but look at that. I'm sure it will tell you a story. And then on, I just made small notes, Chairperson. Yeah, I know time. Sorry, Chair. Oh, I have time, so thanks. Yeah, on page 24. I think my colleagues also have covered me, recovery of critical overdue debt. But there's something I want to raise. I know you are a state entity, so somehow you are sympathetic to other departments. But I can warn you now that you will be like ERCO. You will be owed by everybody, and everybody will not pay you if you continue with that trajectory. At some point, you need to be a bit hard on those departments. And I hope I'm also not being political, because I can see I'm from Northwest. Northwest is not owing you anything. You're doing well with them. So I hope I'm not being political, Honorable McKenzie. And then on page 25, there's an issue around the cash balance versus your total debt. It also tells you a story. I don't want to go into details. Your cash balance versus the debt that you have. CFO will understand what I mean by that. There's something that I don't understand on page 27. CFO presented, because our main interest, if you remember in the last meeting, was around this issue of the regular expenditure. We wanted you to go into details so that we become very clear. It must not just be ghosts who have caused this irregular expenditure. There are people, and there must be related consequences and so on. But he's saying there's a huge backlog, but in terms of your report, earlier report, it shows that there's action taken. But when the CFO reported, he said there's a huge backlog. Now, that backlog is not indicated here. Whether it's been covered by the presentation of 27 cases that you presented. I'm sure I'm still going to come to that 27 cases that you presented. So that also must be clarified. I'm happy today that both the CEO and the chairperson at least have had their caucuses. They are speaking the same language. And I'm happy for that. Because the last time they were presenting quite very interesting report. Now, page 30, you earlier page on 29, you said you have, is it 29? Yes. 29, you said it had detected 27 related cases. On page 30, you said the following graph provides a breakdown of 37 finalized cases. Now, the finalized cases are more than the detected cases. Yeah, so maybe if you can clarify that, maybe my understanding is different from yours. So also look at that. And then on the same page 30, you've got 15 written warning issued. I'm from the public service, and don't blame me when I'm asking this question. That when you give someone a written warning, it should be followed in terms that you also indicated the capital value lost in this regard, so that we can see whether those written warnings were really justified, or some of them are your friends, because we want the fair process at all costs. So if you say 15 dismissed and so on is fine, resigned, you must also indicate those who have resigned, how do you go back and recover? If there's money lost, what is the process to recover that money? Because I may steal and then immediately after that resign. So I'm just adding that. I'll now move to page 34. On the Eastern Cape now. You said there's an intervention of the Premier, but you are not telling us whether that intervention yielded results. Are you now back on track, or is just the intervention, and then in the next meeting we'll be asking about the same intervention? Because you are saying successful intervention convened 14 November. Then does it mean that everything now is moving in the right direction? or you're still having some challenges. So that the Premier has done a good work, we must also congratulate the Premier of Eastern Cape for that intervention on your behalf. And then on page 36, no, let's leave 36 for now, let's go to 39. Yeah, on the AG's action plan to respond to AG's findings. I'm not getting something very clear on supply chain. People have left supply chain. There's no capacity in supply chain. But you compare this with another page where you are talking about the risk. You wrote there the risk, SCM is a risk. Now, I don't think SCM can be a risk where I'm sitting. There should be something wrong with the SCM. That is a risk. But if you just say SCM is a risk, broadly, so you, I don't understand that. Maybe it can be clarified. Because I know that SCM as a unit, as a at a policy level, is not a risk. But people in SCM might be doing things that are a risk. Now, those things must be identified as risk, not SCM per se. As a that's my view. I might not be right, but I think you must look at that as well. That if you just say SCM is a risk, and then so it means your unit, your city must not have SCM. It's a risk. So, and then on the same page, you are saying SCM is not capacitated to handle procurement requests. It's a very vague statement. Is it because the shortages of SCM? Is it because there's no capacity? People are there, all the positions are filled, but these people who are filling those positions, all of them are not relevant to SCM. Maybe if you can do that. And then let me move faster to 41. The issue of fiscal dumping, CEO. If somebody holds your money for 12 months, will it be unfair for you to add interest? Because he's holding your money. You're supposed to have done something on that money over a period of years. You're sticking with your money, or you're afraid you'll break the relationship like you've, McKenzie saying you've done with the woman. But I mean, it doesn't make sense. Department keep your money until end of the year, and then they dump that money towards the end of the year. So literally they are rendering you dysfunctional, because it means the money that you're going to spend that money within the period of 2 months, and then or 1 month, and then it's end of financial year. You must report the AG want to know. So I don't know. Find a way. And then the other issue, I think my colleagues raised it around how you build up your brand. The program is fine in terms of your presentation, but you need a specifically focused brand management program, marketing if you like, where there's, even if it's not that big budget, because I think you are speaking billions, you are spending billions, but there should be a certain portion where you focus on building your brand so that departments can also cooperate with you. You have changed your face, you've done all these things. How does this department know that you have changed? You have turned around the corner, you are moving in the right direction, so that they don't keep your money for the 12 months at least. So if you focus on that as well. Then we go to page 43, the cleanup process. You have reported all these cases to SAPS and blah, 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 but here you are including the independent police investigating the directorate. Something is not right here. Are there police involved in your corruption? It must be clear so that we know that the reason you involve that is because police are also involved, or is the department that is involved, and then for its individual police, because IPD deals with individuals, doesn't deal with departments per se, but you are saying you also have taken some cases to IPD. And then I don't understand page 44. There's about 4 or 5 cases, 2014 cases, and said the outcome, said feedback regarding status of the case is pending. 2014 to now is how many? 5 years. So the investigators can't find anything. Or are they part of the cases that you referred to IPD? Because I don't understand that an investigating officer can investigate a case for 5 years. Something is not right. Okay. And then I've spoken about the risk on 46. Because I don't know, I'm not working for CETA, but I think human capital is also a risk there, from where I'm sitting. You don't have enough people, you don't have capacitated people. Maybe you consider if my proposal is taken by your board, because there's also an issue here, the same issue. Shortage around the risk and so on, because for me, operational inefficiency is quite vague. I don't know who was doing the risk for you. Operational inefficiency, the risk in what way? Are you not able to operate? Because the risk is something that we can always review, look at whether we are mitigating against the risk. But if you just say operational inefficiency is a risk, our people are coming to work late, what does operational inefficiency mean? People are refusing to work. I can interpret it in many. So the person who was doing this risk, I think he was trying to cover you so that you don't explain a lot of things. But I think you must look at those risks and review them. That's my proposal. I think I'm concluding now. I think that was the last point I wanted to raise. Thank you, Chairperson. But I think you have done well, and we must congratulate you. At least there's light at the end of the tunnel. But from where I come from, they said, I was a teacher. If a student is doing well, you must work hard on that student so that he doesn't go back. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lala. I'm looking at the time because I want you to respond adequately. That's how I want the department to respond. Probably in case we don't get back to this question, maybe as you respond, there's a point raised about legislation, and I think there you must also come out clear, because on one side you make one proposal, then when you read going forward, you make another proposal, right? If you say the development and maintenance of systems in the department as it relates to ICT, from a point of legislation, it's a may, not a must issue for me. Then in another page, you make it your responsibility to do it. I think it creates a bit of confusion there. Because then if you complain about an integrated procurement framework for IT, ICT in government, and you put that probably as your responsibility, the question would be who's supposed to do it if it's not you? Because if you are supposed to be the center of ICT work in the government, probably that's something to look at. And that talks also to the point raised by Honorable McKenzie, that on one hand you are saying all ICT-related allocations to departments be put in CETA. In the same document you make a proposal that probably centralized them to treasure. I'm saying you're putting both at the same time. So I'm just saying you also need to be clearer on that so that the committee knows what to support. And I'm sure you'll understand this is also informed by other realities, that the allocation may be to you, but if it sits with the department, you are back to the same problems you have. Whereas, whether we like this thing or not, it would appear that treasury, just that I didn't expect to see treasury away. Yeah, so that was a shock, I was concerned. But I just thought that treasury, if you then said centralized to treasury, it would be easy to use the muscle on the basis of allocation and a way of redirecting the resources, which is different from the battle you're fighting on your own now. So I'm just saying you also need to come up clearer on that. The other issue that you may just need to explain, you know, this part about printing, the chair, I hear it, that you still have backlogs, and that reminded me of a sitting last week. Because part of the question was to say students would qualify, but they don't have their certificates printed, and therefore cannot do anything about that. And that has been put to the Higher Education Department and CETA. And you said you are dealing with the backlog, you are reducing that backlog and so on. In the document, I think that will be 12. It's like 12. In the document, are you referring to the same when you talk about printing work that needs to be outsourced, right? But again, when you talk to that outsourcing, immediately what comes into mind is that the committee has had a presentation from SAPO looking at different revenue streams that they need to look at. Is that a consideration? Maybe just on the part of the structure, the organizational structure, and that will lead me to delegations immediately, would be if we are now in November, honorable members, and we have a plan that says by the 1st of April, the number of these entities, there will be merging of these entities. And we are now in November. The question that would have is that these entities are under an oversight unit of entities by the department. Is there an engagement in that regard that begins to speak to these ones that anyway will be related to, so that you also don't try to build capacity you must dismantle, and probably that capacity already exists in Centec and BBI, like where the possible measures that you're talking to. So this, I'm just saying, when you answer that question on the structure, build this into it, because the understanding we had during the BEEE was that there's an understanding that there's agreement, we see a possibility of for that future. So we can't then pretend like there's no such a discussion, especially when it's few months before the end. So that we are also sure, Minister, even from the side of the department, that that's monitoring by the oversight unit of entities is actually the eyes are on the ball. So that we don't, as I say, it's linked to delegations, because delegations have a way, especially when you have an entity that has got too much of risk. I know that Honorable Mlala, from an administrative point of view, doesn't see supply chain management as a risk area. But the reality is that the actions that go with it, that's where the risk is. And the delegations play a role in that space. Right? That in the process of a measure, and then we work on delegations now, and that decisions that get made as a result of those delegations, are we not going to be back to the problems that we're trying to avoid, especially when you have not really built or rebranded the institution to a point that people will trust what happens. So I'm just saying, when you answer the structure, please look at that issue. Okay. I think the other part about SLAs, I think covered on that point. It's still not understandable, Minister, that you will have a situation where services are delivered and there's no SLAs and so on. And then people, when they do not pay, they say, no, but you can't bill us because you don't have an SLA with us. However, we have received your services. You know, it just doesn't make sense. But on the other hand, it also means on the other side, CETA itself puts itself into problems. Because indeed, if you have got money to spend and you are able to spend this money even without any paperwork, surely as a department, at least that's my way of extending my rent on something else. Because these guys can in any way, you know, cover this cost over a period of time, and I will only give them at the end of the financial year to clean my books that I've spent and therefore justify next allocation. But on the other hand, you are a non-performer because then that money comes at that time and you are unable to spend on your planned capital projects that you want to deal with. Maybe the last point to raise really is that I think all the questions we are asking are not about collapsing CETA. But we need to understand that CETA has to be strengthened. I looked at the departments. Now you are also engaging state security agents. Necessarily, it means if anything goes wrong with CETA and we do not rise to the occasion, it threatens the security itself. Because we have defense units, you've got SAPs, you've got home affairs. We all know what is in all those departments. That will put state security, you may get resistance because of that, because you need to be sure that this is the situation and therefore whatever we put in here is actually safe. So I'm just saying as we continue to ask the questions, are not about stalling anything, but it's just to be sure that we can tell South Africans that there's nothing compromised and that CETA will be able to rise, of course taking into account the reconciliation process. So as you respond, please take those also into account. We'll start with you, Chair. You want to open up and then maybe you'll delegate.
Yes, I'd like to open up quickly and run to some of them. The ones that I leave behind, my colleagues will assist me. But just on the one of SLAs, and I would like just to explain that we took a deep dive in the board where we said that we have a matter standing now pending with the police commissioner, where we said that without the purchase order, I told the CEO and the CFO, without the purchase order or a cabinet order, we are no more going to do business. But we were almost, because of the limit, the risk on the business is that when you have two or three major clients, you are at their mercy. And there's a tendency, I mean, the previous CFO would always say, if I don't do this, I will not get money in Zanwar and I won't be able to pay salaries. caught in between doing something that might be eventually irregular, simply because you want to keep the organization afloat, and it puts that person in that individual's particular position. But quickly, if I may just pick on some of the issues that were raised by, and I thank Madam Honorable Tembo for the comments. When I was talking about the IT and ICT budget for the state, that was at 2017-2018, 19 billion then. I was just trying to give an example that CETA was only doing 5 billion worth of that business. So the other 15 billion was being done by departments and the local government and everything else. And the AG has identified that, as I said, that 80% of that expenditure by government departments is irregular. It has actually increased from 63 to 88%. You know, now they come and say, you know, CETA, we want to do this thing in essence ourselves because of 1234. And when you look at the company or the organization that is actually doing that is sitting at an irregular expenditure worse than ours. In that instance, I can say in the past financial year, our regular expenditure was about not more than 400, about 360 or 70 million. But when we had to go and deep, because we were more, what's the right word, we took a deep dive with the help of the internal audit, we discovered the regular expenditure from prior years. Hence, that's why we're standing at 1.1 billion, which is equal to the police. But that is the ask for this past financial year. Us is going considering all the previous financial years. Then I want to talk to, I'm not saying that everything must just come to CETA, we'll overnight handle the entire 20 billion rand worth of business. Then I go to Mr. Honorable McKenzie with the, I just wanted to make a comment on the Home Affairs and the trilateral agreement, which was reported in the annual report by the outgoing minister for the previous financial year, where there was a trilateral agreement between CETA, Home Affairs, and ourselves. We came up with an investment plan about how we can ensure that there's uninterrupted service provided to us. But obviously the other department decides. Always the problem comes when we have to procure. And then the problem starts about whether we sign or, in essence, or we do not sign. And then when things go out of kilter, it is actually CETA's problem. With respect to the threats, so far it's gone slightly quiet. Nothing much has happened up until the last time when I was here. I made mention thereof. As a result, I'm using an old Nokia Express phone. Honorable Gumu, with respect to the disciplinary hearing, the board members, the CFO resigned voluntarily. Could have been the pressure to bear or being in that invidious situation in January, especially, you know, January is a bad month for us. And you wait until towards the end of March when either the police or one of the government departments wants to dump, but in between you're caught. Then the other was a non-executive director who also resigned voluntarily. The loss control committee doesn't start, Honorable Gumbi, after the last meeting. It's been in existence now for more than 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, 2.5 years. Since we discovered that we have a problem, we cascaded it down. That we can't sit as a board and arrest it at the end, we must catch it early enough. Honorable Madisha, with the assistance and, you know, with the incoming of the Sixth Parliament and the Sixth Administration, and I'm not singing for my lunch when I say thanks to the minister that we're in a position to be able to have bilaterals with government departments in following up on the issues or with the people that their money is owed or due to us. And that endeavor has been very helpful. and in setting up the bilaterals, as it were, to ensure that we address all these outstanding issues.
Then Chairperson, we'll give a better phone.
With the issue of legislation, we do have somebody in legal, but it is work in progress. I think the DG will comment because it exercises oversight on that. Ops expenditure. We in the repurposed organization, you'll see we've got provincial consulting, national consulting is much more focused. And the point I was just trying to make earlier on is that we don't serve all the government departments. We serve about plus or minus 15 to 17. Others are beginning to come on board now with the cloud. And then involvement, I do agree that there is a problem indeed, as we had identified, both at procurement and human capital. Because remember, we're a people's organization. We have 3,000 plus employees. And invariably, if anything would go wrong, it would go wrong at human capital. Because that's where anybody would start to throw the javelin, as it were. So that in itself was hollowed out, and we're in the process of rebuilding. With the issue of certificate backlog, it's not just about printing, because there were 180,000, we reduced it about to 30,000, which was a feat in less than 1 year. But there's a problem that some people write half they write half subjects, and then when you have to add other added subjects, it becomes problematic. Now, it's a tripartite problem between us, Melusa, and the Department of Teaching. Education. It's not just a question of just printing it out, it's to ask them even to collate the relevant information so that we'll be in a position to put it involvement of IPED, invariably, you know, the previous acting commissioner, as you know, was before us and ended up the matter being dealt with IPED. We've been to SCOPA on that issue, which is going to do with forensic data analysis. So what you need to appreciate about procurement space in CETA is that you will not solve it by just looking at CETA. It takes two to tango. And it's a corrupter and a corruptee. So there's an inherent problem with the public service. And you need to change the culture. We're going to work on changing the culture of the organization, internally changing the culture of CETA, considering where we come from. You know, not just a question of upskilling it, as I gave you the example the last time, that if you go to there's a need for a CETA. For instance, in Korea, there is a CETA. And when you sit in Korea, in that CETA, everybody around the PhD is sitting with people with brains and what have you. So it's not an easy one. The last point I just wanted to make is that when we do automate, because even in some of the G platform, one of the solutions which we have, remember we work with National Treasury. And we're even discovering that even some of the framework agreements that we've entered into between ourselves with National Treasury and with state service providers, they were inherent problems. They're not even solving our attended problems. So the problem is beyond just the organization itself. As I've said, some of the people who have been an incubator, half of the people who are working for government, who are CIOs, ICT, whatever they call, are all CETA employees, one way or the other. Just like most people who are in the IT space either have worked for IBM or Cisco or Microsoft, they all know each other. It becomes a small that's not much advice. Let me give to my other colleagues.
Thanks very much, Chair. Just to move very quickly, then thanks for the recognition, obviously.
Thank you.
Thanks for the recognition, honorable members, for, you know, progress that has been made between, you know, the last presentation and now. We really appreciate that. I think that obviously encourages our team here to really move forward on that.
Sorry, I didn't answer the issue of discipline with respect to EXCO and board. Yes, there was only one member of EXCO, which was the company secretary, but nobody at board.
Thank you, Chair. So, Chair, it's really covered quite a lot of the issues. I think very quickly, there was the issue around the acting positions and, you know, do we then adjust, do we pay acting positions, you know, at that level? The answer is that no, we offer an acting allowance, which is about 10% of the salary. So it's largely running on the acting allowances rather than increasing the salary base. So in terms of the acting period, it really varies, Honorable McKenzie. You know, some of the people have been acting for 6 months. Some of the people, depending on the criticality of their role, especially at the HOD and senior managers, that has taken quite some time, a year, and perhaps beyond. So we do have some that are acting for quite some time in those positions. In terms of confirmation of the positions, I think that's where we are now. As we go through the repurposing, the reorg, and all of these elements, you know, SOC rationalization and all of that, we're now beginning to look into the organization and say, how do we move things around? So that is now being covered in that space, to say, to be a digital transformation entity, what kind of resources then will we require and so forth. So we're doing a review and looking into the skills audit to make sure that we've got the right people in that. So that talks to that. The revenue that has been low and why, and I think the Chair has covered that, you know, obviously where we've got you know, a number of the SLA issues that are signed late, not signed in time and so forth, but also where SLAs are signed, but you know, government orders also now have to follow. So every step of the way, often you find that you have to go through a process. So you've got a SLA, then you've got to wait for a government order, and then, you know, you've got to go through the entire process. So that does have an impact, therefore, in our revenues. But also we've had departments where they would commit at a particular revenue levels. And then as you go along, then they start either with budget cuts and so, and, you know, they start, especially if it's some of the big departments or accounts, you know, like the South African Police Services. You know, if I look at the previous financial year, they've had a major cut in the budget that obviously then will impact on the revenue cycles. And then the question around obviously starting without SLAS, I think that has been answered, but it's also just to add, partly obviously the CETA mandate, you know, and mandatory services, but also of course the fact that also you want to keep the customers, and so you want to make sure that you try and get into those negotiations. But indeed, I think as Honorable Mulale was saying, if we continue with that trajectory, then certainly we will be like ESCOM and not be able to move forward. And I think we've now started really strengthening on that to make sure that we put our position down, as the chairperson has been saying. The relationship with DHA, has it been fixed? I think the Chair has spoken to that. We have developed an investment plan. You know, post the last engagement at Portfolio Committee, we've been able to sit with colleagues at an operational level to make sure that we are clear about you know, what needs to be done between the entities, and that is ongoing. So we are driving that. I think the digitalization of procurement process, that has been a long process. We have had a number of you know, third parties or external service providers that we've been working with on some of our G-commerce initiatives. Some of these entities have fallen off along the way. We continue to engage with the likes of GDS and so forth, you know, outside of the through bilaterals between countries, to look into systems that we will then be able to incorporate into the work that we do, but also through the framework agreements that we've got. the likes of Oracle on their ERP. We also then make sure that we can actually be able to automate things like our contract management and so forth through some of these processes. But I think also with the government private cloud ecosystem that we've been talking about, we're now looking into very robust smart procurement processes that we're beginning to build up. So that really is beginning to also lead the way in making sure that indeed we can automize the various systems. There was the issue around the cash flow expectations to say today it is very low, but are we expecting that it will get better and so forth? I think the chair was talking about also an over-reliance on some of the key accounts like SAPS, DOD, you know, who are very big accounts. And so if you don't have a SLA signed with them, you find that you already have got about 25% impact into your total revenues. And so that does become a challenge when you do not sign your SLAs and get the GOs in time. So those are the things that we are driving. We continue to drive broadband. We are looking into new models, of course, from where we started off, beginning to look into how do we partner with other state-owned entities to make sure that, you know, we can deliver a quality service to the people, especially, you know, at the periphery. And so we're beginning to then move very fast in that space. I think KZN is one example where we're beginning to build and approach a more SOC-to-SOC relationship in delivering on that. I think there was the issue around branding that is very important, the rebranding issue. And I think for us, we believe that the rebranding also takes or has to take cognizance of the SOC rationalization itself, which we really embrace, the repurposing of CETA. We believe that it has to be very massive when it happens. It has to be a quantum leap if people have to really see a difference. And so we're excited about the possibility of perhaps even looking into, you know, changing a name, you know, as part of the processes down the line as we start looking into service delivery, you know, digital transformation, that perhaps that then drives us into that space where a CETA starts rebranding from that perspective. But really today, our rebranding efforts are looking into how do we ensure service delivery, how do we build the customer experiences with the work that we do, which is absolutely very important, and hence the issue around the customer centricity in the work that we do. How do we improve our supply chain to make sure that we can build that level of trust from the various customers and clients that work with us. So that's the area that we're looking at. And I think there was the issue also around the internships and learnerships. We do engage already with some of the sister SOCs, but also, you know, with the universities as well. But I think that is the process we've just started to make sure that we can really accelerate in building, especially the digital transformation of 4IR skills that we really need, that we believe that the you know, universities and some of these institutions are sitting with. If you look at the repurposed NEMISA is beginning to look into 4IR skills, that will be very helpful, but also with some of the companies that we work with who are beginning to then bring and roll out some of the skills, including the work that we do as part of our work skills program in that regard. And colleagues will just talk to some of the issues that I will leave out quickly. But if I just look, I think I would agree. If we now look into in terms of Honourable Malal, the issue around the 40% versus 50%, I would agree there that yes, indeed, if you look at the dark blue boxes in the org structure, you will then be able to have to add them into the red ones and the vacancies. It does grow that quite significantly. I think the chairperson has spoken to the legal issues in terms of trying to expedite the process, but also engaging with the ministry there in making sure that we look into some of these legislative tweakings that will then be required moving forward. I think I will then perhaps leave it that. Colleagues will just talk to some of the issues. If the CFO can perhaps talk to quite a number of the other financial issues, and then of course some of the audit issues that that were raised in the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe just to start on the there was the one question about the actual debtors book and the lies. Maybe we can start there. Now, if we had a situation where, it, in terms of current or our debtors book at the end of September, if all the departments paid CETA on time, that would have added an additional 531 million rand to our cash book, to our cash. So the impact is significant. When you then look at whether when SRAs are signed on time, that's got an even bigger impact, because I estimate, and this is an estimation about, if based on the accruals, it's about 795 million. So the impact on these things on the organisation is quite substantial. For us to have benefit of that, that should be something that's maintained during the year, because it doesn't help them paying on time for a few months and not paying on time then afterwards, because that will have a negative impact again. On the issue of interest, the challenge that we had previously when we tried to introduce interest, for us to enforce the interest, it has to be included in the business agreements with the department. The moment you include the interest, they just don't want to sign. And that has actually caused delays, and eventually that's something that's important, but it's difficult to include in a business agreement with the department, because on their side it's treated as wasteful expenditure, so they take it very seriously. Then just on the issue of the so in terms of Section 20 of the CETA Act, yes, SLAs must be signed in the beginning of the year. There's a lot of interactions to try and get SLAs earlier, but in terms of that, it's supposed to be signed before we start in the financial year, and that's something that we need to intensify our action to try and get that enforced at some point in time. The issue on the growth and the consolidation of the budget, that's an option that should be looked at in terms of the broader sector, especially if we reprioritize or refocus sector. Because if you want to drive the digitalization of government, if you go to the individual department, the concern is that, the departments, they've got different things they're driving as well, and they may budget for something, and something else comes up and they reprioritize very quickly. Or the budget cuts, one of the first things that's cut, one of the things that's cut are normally the ICT budget. So if we want to, I think that's maybe to link to that as well. And for us then, obviously, it's not to, for us it's to consolidate the budget towards CETA. That will help government also to drive digitization. And I think that's something that needs to be considered. And if you look at the broadband projects, for example, to make sure those projects are managed in a similar way, in that we actually make progress on that sufficiently, if it would help. Then on the margin, when the SLAs are signed and we build the margins, it does correct the loss. So if you get to that situation, your loss will probably turn into a small profit. So the losses currently, the flaw has got a very direct impact on it. And of course that margin portion, the moment we can recognize that margin from an accounting perspective, it does address the loss. But it doesn't address is to give us enough profit to actually get to a stage where we can actually fund our CAPEX and the renewal of CETA. I think that's something but it does address the loss. Then, just in terms of the loss control committee, just a few things on that. Basically, we've got a two-step process. The loss control committee, a says, who will regulate expenditure and choose in regards to expenditure? If he's irregular expenditure, in the case, and we separate the two, irregular expenditure, what we then do is we hand it over to our HR department that follows through on a disciplinary process. So the HR will then make sure the full disciplinary or the disciplinary process takes place. Now, if you have, for example, if you look at the numbers, during the year, there was 27 picked up, of which 10 related to prior years. But if you look at the cumulative effect, there's also a lot of catch-up that was done in terms of prior years, which means that that's why you've got 55 cases that have been addressed and not 27. Then there is a huge gap, and the figures, there is a difference in the figures. The other thing is one case or two cases can relate to one official, which means if you, there can be two cases of irregular expenditure with one case official implicated, which means you only have one HR case, but you've got two irregular expenditure cases. So the two is not a one-on-one relationship. So depending on the officials those officials that's been found to be by the loss control committee into contravention, those are then handed over to HR. So HR cases can be less than the loss control committee cases. But also these are finalized disciplinary cases and not necessarily all cases that's with HR also. So HR has also got some cases that still busy with. So every month long the loss control committee will sit and HR receives new cases, so that's also a continuous process. Just the one thing on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, where there's one fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and those we hand over to our legal. When there's fraud and corruption, we then hand it over, or any indications there may be any criminal misconduct, we then hand it over to our internal auditor to investigate as well. So we devised irregular expenditure where there was a technicality. Sometimes sometimes contract management depending on what the cause of it is. But if there's any indication of criminal conduct or any case indication of fraud, we hand it over to internal auditor to properly investigate and come with a report, and those cases go to SAPS. And you'll see there's a lot of cases that they've given feedback, that our internal audit executive has given feedback on those cases. But any indication, we do hand it over to our internal audit department. Then the item on the cash balance versus debt, and specifically one slide where we talked about the receipts and versus the billing. The fact is we collected much more than we bought because we also collected a lot of overdue. So the two is basically intensive debt collection procedures that we went through in the last few months. And then the backlog on the loss control committee, when it was established a few years ago, because it was established about 2.5 years ago, when it was established, at that point, in the organization, there was not, the consequence management happened very slowly. So when the establishment of the loss control committee, when it was established, the consequence management accelerated quite a lot. So in essence, that's why you had a lot of old cases that came into the loss control committee, because prior to that, in some of those cases 10 years old, for example, prior to that, consequence management did not happen as quickly as it should. I mean, the establishment of the loss control committee, it accelerated quite significantly, and a lot of old cases has also been addressed. So I think that's what I tried to say when I made that comment, is that the loss control committee has made a huge difference in terms of accelerating cases and to make sure consequence management happens much quicker and much faster, and that cases are being dealt with. previously sometimes it took a long time before cases were dealt with. So I think that's a comment that I tried to make there. Thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to pick up on the few things that have been mentioned. The first one, Honourable Chair and Members, is the issue of the threats to staff that happened previously. Those have reduced significantly, and I think it is the phase in which we are with the investigation, because a lot of threats happened during the time that we were doing the forensic investigation, and therefore once action had been taken and things had moved on, those threats were quite significantly reduced, actually to almost nothing yet, but sorry, the chair will, sorry. So they have reduced a little bit. The issue of filling of the positions, generally speaking, we have to be very careful in how we fill the positions going forward. Given that there is a repurposing process and a remodeling, redesign of the structure, we had to be careful right from the start, because we had almost 70% of our staff sitting in the maintenance section, and you are trying to change the organizational operating model into a more consulting and services organization, which means that the profile that you had at the time of the restructuring is different from the in terms of employees, is different. And you did not want to just willy-nilly fire people, so we had to do a skills analysis, look at what we had, and we could see that at the time, the people that we have were not necessarily the people that we're going to need in the future. So the decision in terms of the implementation of the remodel organization was that we would spend 2 years reskilling and redirecting people's skills, so that you don't have to get rid of people, so to speak. So that is why we were a little bit slow in terms of that. So that is just in addition to also the attractiveness of the organization currently, which, as my chairman has spoken about, that is a problem. So we are looking at the skills, and the CEO has actually mentioned it, that we have bursaries that we're giving, we have internships that we're running, and we're running all the hackathons and opening academies to try and support the strategy of government that is actually skilling people in the necessary the 4IR skills. I just wanted to touch on those two things, because I think there is an issue, and we have worked very closely with the department, and just want to thank the minister, because she's also been very supportive in demanding us to actually try and push the strategy of the 4IR skills, and we've tried very hard, and we're working in collaboration with the department in that direction. Thank you.
I think at this point, because other matters were relating to the oversight in the department, I'll just check if the minister would want to make comments before we release it.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all colleagues. Apologies for arriving late. Just got stuck on the way from the airport. Chairperson, as Sita has indicated, and I would like to just make reference to a few things that have been raised by the members of parliament, starting with your question, Chairperson, on the issue of IEP or ICT centralization in terms of the budget by Treasury. The reason we strongly believe that it's proper for the country to do that, as the Chairperson mentioned earlier, in terms of the wastage that we see in government, in most cases it is in IT-related stuff. And we're saying this, Chairperson, because as we talk of the consider on the stage, we're taking into consideration once more the challenges that we're facing as the economy is going down every day. So ours is to say, how do we help government to make sure that we spend when necessary? And of course, as we say this, that we need that centralization, we're also aware, as they've confirmed, that we do have human capital challenges and structural challenges at CETA, which is why we're talking of the remodeling. And we agreed that we're going to set up a PMO that must look specifically on customer-related matters, especially the customers that we're talking about. The team chairperson, as I already mentioned, the challenges that we are faced with as we talk about corruption. And what we see a lot, that CETA this and that, that in most cases, yes, we are responsible for certain things, but this that the chairperson mentions at times, if the department does not pay on time, we force to rob Peter to pay the other one. And CETA does that because they have to serve the country. They can't afford to say we're going to punish you because you did not do this, because it's at the detriment of the security of the country or whatever services that the department must render. But indeed, we have said we need to improve on contract management, which will then enhance that departments, if they have to pay in May, they have to pay in May. So that's why they were talking about bilaterals with their respective departments. And as we move to the structural challenges in relation to the law, the department is working on that process, Chairperson, and next year we'll be coming to Parliament to present the amendments on the CETA to say how do we go about. And that remodeling again features, because currently CETA does, you see them, they just like a procurement agency, and on the remodeling we want them to drive innovation and be that government wants. When government say, a certain department says we want to develop an app, let the IoTs be driven from CETA and all that. And therefore, as we talk of reconfiguring the portfolio now, not the state, certain functions that are in relation to infrastructure and other things be taken to the infrastructure company that we're talking about. Of course, Chairperson, As the chairperson of CETA mentioned, it takes 2 to 10, and we really want to appeal to members that they also help us to make sure that, because as I spoke of our weakness in terms of contract management, but at times it's because of the disagreement, because as CETA doesn't impose to client departments. Client departments have to give us a specification. But also the unavailability of CIOs in certain departments hammers the work that must be done by CETA. And then you find out later, then the client comes and complains, by that time we had to change specs several times, and that delays in the procurement process that we're talking about. And nobody takes responsibility, because it is CETA that must do. And as CETA does procurement, again, CETA doesn't do that on its own. The departments, the clients themselves, are the ones that are driving that. Because, as I said, they develop the spec and they sit in the bid education committee and other structures to make sure that there's synergy and we do not just impose. But that of going back to a state-owned IT company is very important, Chairperson. Indeed, as I said, we will save a lot from government, but as we talk about that, the emphasis on terms of reskilling and upskilling the people that we have in the organization, it becomes very important, and attracting new skills, which is what they've already spoken about. I spoke of the legislation, Chairperson, that already we'll be making a presentation, and the positions they've already advertised, as they said. Okay, for now let me stop there.
No, the minister has covered that. Okay. We take it once again, thanks to CETA for the presentation. And of course, as Honorable Mlala would have said, we would want you to keep going. So that's goal. It's not really just the idea, but to keep going. Thanks once again. Honorable McKinney.
Thank you, Chair. Very small. Thank you, Minister. Nice to see you. You just give life to my speeches again. You've taken my ammunition away. Minister, both the CEO and the Chair referred to the restructuring exercise and the skills audit to be undertaken within CETA, obviously, to turn into the state IT company. Just to give me an idea, Minister, you mentioned legislation as well. Can you give us some sort of timeline when we expect to see the legislation coming through and when you should have your CETA, that model, that repurposing model completed. I just want to get an idea in my head so I can plan my overseas trips. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie. We are planning to bring the bill, the amendments to Parliament in March, because we have to take it to Cabinet and all those processes, and then we're hoping that by end March it will be here. And of course, the reconfiguration is also dependent on the CETA amendment bill, but we are taking into consideration, as one question was raised, that as we reconfigure CETA and then we're trying to fill in the vacancies, we must make sure that there's not going to be duplication and skills that are not going to be utilized. That's why when we came on board, that there's a need for a moratorium so that we check from CETA and all the elements that we're talking about that we're going to take from this one and merge with that one, take from them, we check within. All our entities under the portfolio were given an instruction to conduct a skills audit in order to understand the capability of the portfolio so that we can move people around. Of course, when that has to happen, it means we have to engage with unions, which we did earlier, but now on the actual processes, when a decision has been finalized, then we're able to go back to them to say, as we committed to the ANC government, nobody's going to lose a job, but this is where people who can place them and, of course, upskill those that need to be upskilled, because key to an efficient service is a capable personnel. I was not just to say we want to retain the 3,000 plus from CETA and other portfolio organizations under the department, but to say how do we deliver efficient services to the public, and it requires all of us. That's why we said training will be compulsory. It's not negotiable. It's negotiable, including bursaries that we are offering. Everybody that's going to take a bursary that we'll be giving a bursary to are the people that will be getting bursaries on the skills that we require as the organization. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, thanks, Minister. I think we, once again, thanks for making time. We would take the next presentation, which is from the department. You are free to stay or leave, depending on what you have on the other side. Probably Home Affairs is already calling you to fix one or two things, so we would not keep you here. Minister, in your absence, when we accepted your apology, indicated that from a time point of view, because there's a sitting of the House, we make the assumption, which has now been proven right, that members of the committee have received the presentations beforehand and have gone through that. Okay, so would reduce your time to 20 minutes, which includes the overview of the minister and the actual presentation. And members would engage. We're still targeting 1 o'clock to be out. In case we are not, it can be more than 30 minutes beyond that point because of the 2 o'clock. So you'd want, I want you to do that. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Because of time constraints, can I then go straight to the ADG to take us through the matters that are relevant for today? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, Minister. We'll take through the committee on the peer performance management system for ICASA. As you would have seen, that this is noticed that this is a legislative requirement that is actually put down in terms of section 6, capital letter A of subsection 1 and 2 up until 4 of the ICASA Act of 2000. That ICASA councillors are required, first, the first point is that the minister in consultation with the National Assembly is required to establish a performance management system to monitor and evaluate the performance of ICASA councillors both at an individual level and as a collective. And then subsection 2 states that the ICASA PMS must set key performance indicators, measurable targets, as well as a procedure to measure and review performance of the ICASA Council at least on an annual basis. And then subsection 3 requires that as soon as practicable, after appointment of the chairperson or any councillor, a performance agreement must be concluded by the said chairperson and or councillor with the minister. Subsection 4 states that the evaluation of the performance of the chairperson or councillors must be conducted by a panel constituted by the minister in consultation with the National Assembly. So this section actually at the end, and it actually covers it. It says, after an evaluation of the chairperson and councillors, the council itself must submit a report to the National Assembly for consideration. These are the on the next slide, it talks about the legal requirements. It talks to the one that details on the issues surrounding the PMS. It talks to Section 438, the delegation and powers of council, as to the issues that can be delegated by council and the issues that council only council can do. Those issues, such as your regulation making and licensing, those are sitting in ICASA Council. Gazetting of inquiry, which is Section 4B. This sits with resides within the office of the councillor. As you would know, members, Section 7 and Section 8 and Section 9 deals with the term of office, removal from office of a councillor, vacancies in the ICASA Council. This, I think, they are very much aware of, and you deal with them on a time-to-time basis. And then, based on the inquiry of Section 4B, CASA is required to publish a finding in terms of the Act. Those findings are supposed to be published within 180 days from the date that CASA must publish those findings. This is the part that also you notice that Section 11A3 requires that the CASA within 14 days of a meeting that they must publish the minutes of their meeting, both on the website and also make them publicly available. So Section 4 just deals generally with the functions of the authority. And then you have Section 11B, which deals with the Code of Ethics, wherein ICASA is mandated in terms of the Act that within a period of time they are supposed to publish their Code of Ethics on their website, and that Code of Ethics must be publicly available. So that Code of Ethics has to be there. And then Section 12.2 of the ICASA Act deals with the disclosure of interest by members of council as to how they must declare the disclosure of their interest, and that they must be publicly available. So, and then the last one in this regard is the annual report. So we're just highlighting here as to what are the things that are required that ICASA must do in executing their function. Just as a background, the first step of the performance management system was approved by the National Assembly in 2012 and was only applicable during the fourth administration, from 2009 to 2014. It was only approved in 2012, and we know sitting here that no agreements were concluded with any ministers of communication during that time. The performance management system expired at the beginning of the fifth administration and was never reviewed. So during that period, the department had invited members of the public to apply to be members of the panel in line with Section 64A. So Section 6, capital letter A, subsection 4, actually just says there shall be this panel, and then the minister at the time actually went further to say these are the kind of people that are required for the panel. The expertise are set out there, that it should be a retired High Court judge, it should be a representative from the Office of the AG, expert from academia, at least two representatives from organized consumer groups of civil society, an independent consultant or expert in the electronic communications or broadcasting or postal sector from outside South Africa. So those are the requirements. So this invitation went out, and we know that at the time that there was a non-responsive of the appropriately qualified people that applied during this period. So it was only published during that period. So what is the current system, the one that has expired? What does it have? Set out the policy framework, the ICASA strategic plan, the ICASA annual performance plan, the performance agreement, individual and collective, and actually set out the requirements for an evaluation panel and what needs to be contained in the annual report and the evaluation panel report. So those are the issues that we covered on the PMS system that has since expired. So now, why do we then still have the need to have a performance management system? The reason for that is that it requires that the contraction for performance should be transparent and should be done in an objective manner. And actually, monitoring of performance and attainment of objectives should be done also as well in a very transparent manner. So you have, and actually even provide the mechanism for dealing with non-performance of councillors, basis for removal of from office remuneration and incentives for performance, and basis for reappointment. So this is why you require a performance management system to be in place. So what are the challenges that we had with the current framework that we've established? So there are actually some of them, we call them design challenges, which is by design, the system says there should be an individual measurement and there should be a collective performance. So you are looked at as a councillor and one person, that this is your function as a councillor, but also because how the ICASA Act is structured, you are also required as part of a collective to be measured against that. And then the other challenge is that by design is that because councillors serve a period of a 4-year term, the current framework provides that they should be monitored on an annual basis. So the annual basis for some of the, especially the work of councillors that they do, because it requires individual and collective decision making, it is a challenge. Once you're looking at that 1 year, then there's a long period that you will see and also it's a design that we made as a department, that between the time when the performance was done and the evaluation by the panel, there's a long period between those two actions having happened. So you're relying on a lot of historical data that might have been sorted out by a flashing of time. So we also noticed that there is an issue around the accountability chain, the role of the minister and that of the National Assembly. So the minister would appoint the panel, would sign the agreement with the councillors. The councillors submit the same to the National Assembly. So so minister, after she's done all of that, she's not really involved once the actual evaluation is done. It's done by the independent panel. So we've noticed that when I talk about long-term implications and need for legislative review, you have a this issue of individual vis-a-vis collective. You have an issue of CASA by design has their processes do not go over 1 year period. How do we then try and move on? CASA has never finalized, CASA councillors have never finalized the program within a period of a year. And yet the performance management system requires that they must be evaluated on an annual basis. So it's an ongoing issue. So there are those long-term implications. The last part is that the performance has to be linked to annual remuneration adjustments and an incentive. Currently, CASA councillors, their remuneration adjustment is based on the TPSA adjustment. So they rely on that. There is a correspondence that minister would confirm on an annual basis that if let's say public service is getting a certain percentage, that's the percentage that they will get. However, that percentage currently at CASA, it is not linked to performance, it is not linked to anything. So there are those kind of, that it needs to be linked, that the adjustment and incentives have to be linked into that. So what is the current status? We're saying that the PMS needs to be redesigned to take into account the above. We have started working on this, and we are consulting CASA as a department. So we still stating that the issues of the appointment of the panel remains a technical challenge, which we are trying to resolve. And we are saying that once the department finalizes the new PMS, and then the minister will submit to the National Assembly for the National Assembly to agree or disagree to it. And our targeted date is that the PMS should be in place by April 2020. So those are the current issues that we are faced with when it comes to the performance management system. As I have said, Chair, we have started working on it. We are looking at a number of issues that we know that we raised even in this house around the performance management system of the TASA as to how effectively it should work, and looking at best practice, how it is dealt, entities such as the TASA, how it is dealt with elsewhere, so across the globe. So that is where we are. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable members, looking at time, can I then invite you to make the point? I think I'll come later to give some way forward, which I think you should look at. Honourable Mtembu, followed by Honourable McKenzie, then Honourable Fagu.
Thank you once again, Chairperson. Mine is on slide 7. Looking at the proposed panel, I did notice that there is an absence of a representation, parliament representation. On that note, Chairperson, I just want to propose that there must be a representation of maybe two people, if that will be online with the legal issues. Thank you.
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just can tell me, obviously the panel has to be attractive enough for people to serve on, especially the fairly high-profile people you're putting down here. You know, it either needs to add to their CV, or it needs to be something that they can boast about, or it needs to pay well. So how is the panel remunerated? Where does that come? Does that come out of ICASA's budget? And can you give me an idea of what the remuneration is per panel member? And how often would the panel sit? If the PMS is conducted annually, does this mean it sits once a year and does its work? And what I'm just trying to get an idea of the time commitment required by panel members in a single year. If you could put that into days or weeks, that would assist. And then DDG, you've alluded to steps you're taking to resolve the technical challenges. On a phone. Oh, okay. The technical challenges with the appointment of course, with digital communication. With the technical challenges with the appointment of the panel, how are you trying to resolve that? Are you looking at taking out the High Court judge or perhaps reducing some of the requirements for panel members? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Fagu.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I think one of the most important things that we need to make sure happens quick, Minister, is the issue of performance agreements with the council. Because sometimes, as a committee, we find it difficult to measure the council without this performance agreement. Because according to Section 6, Subsection A, 1, the minister must, in consultation with the National Assembly, establish the management system. Because if we don't have this, it is even holding us accountable as members of parliament if this is not happening. But I see that we have a deadline of April 2020. Perhaps is that practical? So if the department wants to change that date, I don't know. But for me, I think April 2020 is too far. But of course, we'll come back in February as members of parliament. But But also when I was looking at the Act minutes, I think at some point we need to review it, especially when it comes to the individual and collective assessments of council members. Because if you talk about individuals and the collective, sometimes maybe as the chairperson of the council I can say that I've done well, but the rest have not done well. So I think we need to re-look at it, because for me I find it very difficult when you do it individually. But also there's this thing, section 7, subsection B, which also give the chairperson powers after the term ends that he can be reappointed. He can be reappointed after for 5 years. It's also part of the Act. So I'm thinking in the long term, the department needs to make sure that you look into the Act so that at least we need to make sure that the Act is amended. Thanks, Chair.
Minister, I'm sure you'd want to respond to those, but as I said, we'll probably work out a way forward. That the expectation of the committee was to receive a draft of the performance so that as part of complying to the law, that we make inputs at that point, so that we don't come later in April and then say there are issues with regard to that. So as part of your response is also to look at whether you'd be able to present the draft in the first portfolio committee meeting in the next term, not April. So once the date's out, I think as a first thing we thought we should look at, with an understanding that we all agree that we are responsible. I'm saying even though it's 2014, so to say, but we are responsible in ensuring that there's no contravention of law, and as we speak, there is that. And I think once we have that at the back of our minds, we'll all work together to ensure that this happens. But secondly, because ICASA, we are in a process of appointing councillors there. So you'd want that you do not also have new ones coming to the same environment, and that you can start on a clean slate going forward. So I'm just saying, as you respond, also look at that. That's the way forward we are looking at, so that the committee is able to look at those performances.
Thank you, Chairperson. We fully agree with you that we have to present the draft on time. You've been generous when you give us February. We're looking at December, but February is so that we do detailed work, both is dependent, not only, no Chair, no Chair,
no problem.
We still have to engage with the party, Chair. You'll be closing, so just give us more time to say in February. It makes sense, yes, a first meeting in February. Okay, whenever we come back, the first meeting, I will definitely do that. Honorable Fago makes a very important point in terms of ensuring that we align to what the chair says in terms of fast-tracking the development of the performance agreement and framework. And she's asking the same question, but she was asking if it's practical. I think it was a matter of saying that's too far if we're saying April. We meant like by April we should have finalized. That's what we meant there. And of course, when we talk of holding councillors individually at ICASA, in one other meeting I explained that councillors at ICASA are appointed full-time. And therefore, as government, as we spend money there, at DDG level, we have about 9 councillors. Yes, 9 councillors, including the chair, and they're at a DDG level. Hence, I spoke as part of the reconfiguration of the portfolio. Is it necessary for us to have full-time 9 DDGs at council level, whilst we have executives that are driving the work full-time again? So those are the things that we are really looking at as we're talking about the configuration and the changes that we're going to make in the portfolio. But now the reason why it's important that because when we appoint you as an individual, even if you're going to be part of the portfolio committee,
But as an individual, there's a specific task that you are given in terms of expertise that you have and that we expect of you to perform when you are there. And then there's the collective responsibility thereof in terms of the participation of the committee members, all of them. I think we'll have to relook at the issue, Mam Tembo, the issue of parliament representation. I don't think the law is against that. We'll just check. What does it mean? Is it allowed? If it's not allowed, what are the issues that would make it not to be allowed? And on Honourable Mackenzie, in terms of the remuneration of the panel, and the law says they are there for evaluation of the performance. So they will sit as and when now it's time for evaluation, not that they will be there all the time. As we draft, we agree, we enter into agreements, and then they come and make the assessment. Those are the times. Then in the agreements, it is us that will determine how often do we make the agreements. And then those are the times that they must sit and look into those. If they require 3 days to do that, then they will sit for 3 days based on whatever that would have agreed on. The remuneration costs. We can't say now this is so much, but what we're trying to do is to standardize, because they are like a board or whatever, is to standardize the cost. And we're looking at that to say we do not want to just pay people 10,000 rand for sitting and there's nothing they're sitting for. But how do we make sure that we're looking at across all the other entities and the other commissions that are out there to make sure that when they sit, we don't undervalue them also, but we don't overpay at the same time. Because as you correctly put it, there must be an incentive to make sure that the people are attracted to come and serve in the panel. Those are the issues. The reappointment for the next 5 years, it was raised by Honorable Fago. Reappointment depends on the appointing authority. There's nothing in the law that says we are forced, but all they put is the maximum term. That if you reappoint, it can't be more than 2 terms. It doesn't mean you can't appoint once. And all that. So that one is dependent on all those things that we're talking about. ADG, do you want to add?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just going to be very quick. I just wish to clarify a few technical things. In the presentation, we're trying to capture where we come from, where we are, and where we are going. And maybe because of the time, some of the things are not coming out clearer. For instance, the constitution of the panel, you know, what we have listed there in the slide, that is what was required in the past. You know, because that was non-responsive, we are now reviewing that. We still wish to maintain the high caliber, you know, of the people in terms of skill and everything, as Honorable Mackenzie says, but also we want to balance that against availability. So that is the first thing I wish to indicate. The second thing is the reason we are in a problem now with the system is that in designing the system, they included things that expire in a year and some expire in 5 years, such that, you know, in a year some of these things become irrelevant in the system, so it needs to be reviewed quickly. The way we are proposing the elements of the new system, we want to make a distinction. There should be a policy framework part. There needs to be the strategic plan that covers 5 years, the annual performance plan, and then the agreements with individual councillors, you know, and those will capture elements that expire in a year and those over a longer period, as long as the councillors are part of this. So all of that then constitutes the system, but when some of these elements expire, you don't need to review the entire system, you just update those elements as annexures as and when they expire. So we really, Chair, we're aware you needed to see a draft today, but we said in the spirit of the law, which talks about consultation with the National Assembly, we view consultation as softer than oversight. It allows for this kind of discussion. You know, we thought we will bring the kind of challenges we are dealing with at this point in time. Thank you very much.
Now, thanks for the response. We understand you are trying to manage on this side, but please know that we are not manageable for this one. We need a draft. First meeting of the minister. First meeting of the year. So at least no specific things. Once you get the program, you know that in that first meeting we expect to see the draft. But I think what's important is that the committee is briefed on where challenges have been, and at least a commitment that you are already working on, and that you'll be able to meet those deadlines. If unless there are other matters that members would want to raise, otherwise we must thank the department for responding, Minister. And I know that we'll be rushing to the House. As it relates to minutes which are more of committee matters, we'll be taking those to our last portfolio committee next week. We just hope we'll get the documents also well on time so that it cuts the time for the presentation. Honourable members, let me also indicate that in relation to the program, there is no approval for the oversight in Mpumalanga. So I think that honourable member is very tired. He wants to go and rest. But we thought that the focus was really on those sites that were visited and there were challenges before with regard to implementation of broadband and so on. Okay? But the response we have is that that should be done in the oversight period, so they would want members to remain in the parliamentary work. So further matters, I think, would deal with those. I also indicate that we'll also have a quick briefing to members next week, subcommittee members, on the 3rd, because then the 4th is affected in one way or the other, but we'll do that at that time. Otherwise, thanks for making time until we meet next week. Thanks, Minister, for making time. We hope if you are not here, there will be Deputy Minister at least. But we are really great that you made it today, and it helps clarify. Honourable Mackenzie was missing. You can then see that he brings even the past. Okay, thanks, members. The meeting stays adjourned.
No,
until next time.